What's up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 22 of the Jungle Podcast. I'm Carter.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Steven.
And we're back. Took a little holiday hiatus, you know, spend some time with the family, relax.
Well, you know what that leads into? You know what that leads into? Holiday hiatus, that alliteration. That's what I want to talk about today. That's my guy.
That's what we're going to get into. So yeah, but just hop right in, I guess.
First things first, rest in peace to the great MF Doom, one of my all-time favorite rappers. Forever the metal phase. Man, that guy is next level. Anywho, so I assume both you guys watched the video. I got you guys to watch in relation to like rap and a little bit of history. It gives a little bit of history. Honestly, Vox in general is a really good channel to watch for like insightful videos. But like that one specifically, obviously, is very, very fleshed out in what they want to talk about. Like there's a lot of history that they give you, but they also go pretty deep into like the actual like quote unquote science.
Yeah.
Of like literal rap, which is pretty neat. Just wanted to get you guys' initial thoughts quickly before I keep going on what you guys think of like rap, if it gives a new understanding or perspective on it, or et cetera, and how like words and how you say words and your tone and your delivery of a sentence can change how a song is perceived.
Steven, I'll let you go first on this one since probably the newest to this. I don't know.
He's got a stern look. Seems like someone's ready to talk.
I think it would be safe to say of the three of us, I'm the least invested into rap as a genre, and I'd say part of that is also like I'm the least knowledgeable on it. So like I can safely say I don't fully appreciate the complexity of that genre. Like I enjoy some rap, but I know a lot of it goes over my head. Like I don't fully like comprehend and understand like the nuance of the music. And so yeah, that video definitely kind of like opened my eyes to like layers of creativity that I definitely hadn't acknowledged prior to this. Because it's like, yeah, you hear rhymes in the music, but seeing them break down like a verse and showing how intertwined everything is. Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, I never latched onto that or thought about it. It's just like music to me is something that I kind of like passively enjoy in that sense, in that I'm not somebody who analyzes it and breaks it down. I just listen to it and enjoy it. So yeah, that definitely like I have a greater understanding and appreciation now for the nuance that goes into that.
But I would say do you consider yourself like obviously not a fanatic of rap, but like a casual listener and fan of
sure,
rap?
Sure. Yeah.
So would you say that like even with that newfound knowledge you have, but prior to that, would you still like thoroughly enjoy a rap song, not realizing how complex it actually could be?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Cause I mean, like, it's like any good piece of art, like a film or a video game or whatever. It's like,
yeah, any medium.
As long as you're enjoying it, the artist has done their job. It just, when you break it down and see all the little details, then it gives you a great appreciation of like, oh, wow, this is what they had to do to make such an excellent product, to get there, or to make such an excellent piece of art, I should say. Good music is good music. I enjoyed it regardless. But I guess now I kind of have more of an understanding of why I enjoyed it. You know, it's like I can actually like understand what they did to create it.
Yeah, like it offers a new perspective in your enjoyment. Like before you might have enjoyed it because like sonically it sounded like very like pleasing and like very sound and you know all that. But like now it's like now that you understand the complexity of what they might actually be saying, whether it's a message, whether it's like how they're delivering their lines or whatever, it gives you that. Okay, well, that's fair.
Yeah, because it's like I guess you could condense it to this. I enjoyed it because I thought it was good, and now I can enjoy it because I understand why it's good. Like it's a different way of appreciating it.
No, that's fair. I feel like I honestly feel that way about a lot of things that you even tell me about, whether it be music or some films you've told me to watch or a video game you might have told me to play, etc. It's like when you go into your bag and start explaining like all the different things that might have gone into it, it's like you get a newfound appreciation for it.
Sure, yeah.
P?
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of it I sort of like have already known about because like you, I'm like a huge fan of rap and like I love looking into lyrics and like and just seeing like how they break down their rhymes, where they're like, and especially songs where they like rap off beat or like between bars or whatever. I love that shit. That stuff's so good. But one thing that I like sort of like I already knew about it because like I've taken some speech classes and like a lot of the time like there's a lot of things that
you can speak.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that like sort of overlap between like music and rap because you're just sort of presenting like an idea or something. So the like musical motive where you're sort of like rapping and like rhyming like or timing your rhymes to the actual beat of the music and not necessarily like rapping on beat but sort of like going with the actual like sound of the music. That I love that.
So I think they delve on that briefly when they talk about Aquemini, 180,000, like where he accents the beat.
That is that what you're getting at? And Kendrick's rigor mortis.
Kendrick, but that's on beat for the most part.
Yeah, but that's like musical.
Oh, but you're talking about like the motive.
Yeah. It pushes the whole sort of like that whole idea throughout the whole song, where like the entire like not just like one verse or like a couple bars are doing that. It's like the whole song is like structured that way.
I think his whole fourth verse does that, if I'm not mistaken, when he takes it into the gear and literally just starts going in with the motive at the beginning.
But yeah, I don't know. I've always had like a fascination with like, you know, sort of the high craft like rap artists, the people that, and like in music in general, like whenever you can like really like sort of hear that passion and like detail that people put into their music, like I don't know, I just prefer artists that like you can really tell that they're working on their music rather than people just like throw shit out half ass and it's like, well, it hits the mainstream so like it's good.
No, that's fair.
Which is not necessarily bad all the time,
but I think the other thing with that is part, well, I just want to quickly tap on what you just said there, is like, so someone like Drake, people think he half-asses albums all the time, but at the same time, he's also got so many good songs where it's like, you can tell he spent time on it. So it's like, even if an artist like that's hit or miss, I feel like I consider them to be a good enough artist where it's like worthwhile to listen to. Not necessarily to the point where I'm like, oh, this song's good, when it's trash.
Yeah.
Like, no one was saying that Channing Tatum line was like fire. Like, no one was saying that was fire.
Yeah.
But like, then you hear some other lines where he's like, that's around the time where your idols become your rivals. You make friends with Mike, but got to AI him for your survival. Like that is an intricate bar. And it's like, how does the person that makes a fucking Channing Tatum into Channing Tatum like line, like, you know, it doesn't make sense to me, but well, it's like whatever. Like everyone has those days, you know?
It's like, I bet at the same time, it's like you're Drake when you're sort of at the top of the rap game. Like you could just do whatever. Honestly, you could literally say anything, release any song. People are going to be like, well, he's still sick. So,
there's going to be at least like a good chunk of people that are like, it's fire still, no matter what, you know, 100%.
Yeah.
The reason I got you guys to watch that video, though, is because I wanted to talk about MF Doom. Mm-hmm. So, Steven, I don't know if you're too familiar with MF Doom and or his music or legacy, but he's basically just like an underground hip hop artist. Underground in the sense that he never really was like super mainstream. But very, very iconic. I think Mad Villainy, one of the albums he released, is among the highest rated albums of all time, both on Metacritic and like, it's, I don't know, it's got ridiculous ratings for how like experimental and abstract it is. So that's like the genre of hip hop he's in, is like experimental and abstract hip hop for that album. And I kind of just wanted to touch on his legacy and what he was capable of. And that's why I got you guys to watch that video, because it shows how he uses his rhyme schemes and how he rhymes to portray the villain that is my favorite villain as well. Coincidentally, is Dr. Doom. Mm. So he uses rhyme schemes, rhyming techniques, and what he talks about and his source material. And he weaves it into his music, whether it be through like skits using like sound bits from the 80s Spider-Man and the 80s and 90s Fantastic Four cartoons and stuff, to create very, very interesting albums that it's like for its time, I guess you could say it was ahead of its time, and even now it still might sound fresh because it's like a bunch of short songs, never know what to expect, things are offbeat, things are onbeat at the same time, and like it kind of throws you in for like a very interesting, like you can't anticipate what's going to happen, which I think is the trend of a lot of music today, where it's like songs are becoming shorter, more concise to like kind of match people's attention spans. And so I guess what I'm trying to get out of all of this is just like how talented of a man he was to like, okay, first of all, I don't think there's a lot of people in the world that are capable of making a holler rhyme, which I think is touched on that video, which is where every single thing he says in the sentence rhymes with each other.
Yeah.
And still makes a complete sentence. Like that is ridiculous. That is some like next level, like lyrical technique. You know what I mean? Like, that's it just like, blows my mind that like someone could think of something like that and it still has a cohesive meaning to it when you look at it. It might not like at face value, like him saying something, you might be like, oh, I think he's just saying words to say words. But then you actually read what he says and like take time to dissect what he says. And you're like, whoa, that's an actual sentence. Like he's actually saying something with an entendre behind it.
I feel like a lot of people say like they're just saying stuff to say stuff because like when you're doing that, when you have to make a cohesive sentence that rhymes with like everything rhymes, like you have to get creative with the words that you're using to make sure that like it is rhyming and it's still conveying that message. So like obviously you might say something that's like not commonly, like a word that's not common, but it still has that meaning if you like actually listen to the bar.
Yeah, like I think there's one line there. Oh, what's the auditioning morticians? That's what he says. So it's like it's a half rhyme. So it's not exactly like, it's not like they exactly rhyme, you know what I mean? Like it's not like look and book where it's like a direct rhyme. But
what's that? What, a syllable rhyme, right? Or
like a half syllable rhyme. So there's like, obviously it's very common in rap. Like Jay-Z said that's what he considers to be actual skill, is when you can take half syllable and no syllable rhymes and get them to actually work and make like a story. So for example, Eminem is ridiculously good at that.
Where he rhymes like
Andre 3000 is a good storytelling rapper. J. Cole is a very good storytelling rapper. You know, there's a plethora of artists that are really good at it, but it's just very impressive to do all on its own. You know, like someone that could tell a story in rap, or someone that can, you know, do half syllable raps, let alone hollow rhymes or whatever your case may be for bars. It's extremely impressive. You know? That's all I really wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
My guy MF Doom, I mean, and how he uses these freaking lines and schemes to portray himself as a villain of rap.
Yeah. And the whole like moniker of like being
That's so fucking cool. Yeah. Like
a lot of
cartoon
people
a comic book moniker and made it fucking lit.
It's like he's a lot of people who try to imitate him like and just end up being corny. You know what I mean? Like
it's hard. Just, you know what I mean? It's not easy to, first of all, have a persona and keep it going for that long, let alone have critically acclaimed albums.
Yeah. Well, and not like have it played out where you're like, okay, we get it. Like, you're the same thing. But it's like, if you're so creative, it's like, it doesn't matter because you sort of like etch out your own niche.
Yeah, 100%. What I want to know though is how he got, I'm assuming he kind of just did it. And because he's not like a big enough mainstream artist, how he got like the clearance for using all the skits and stuff on his albums, where it's literally pulled from like Marvel.
Well, I guess
Marvel shows from the 80s and 90s. It's like, would there be patents and or rights or like, you know, rights of use to it?
What record label was he under?
Stone's Throw. I think it's a self independent. He might have just asked and everyone was cool with it.
That it might be like after a certain era though. They don't have the copyrights and it's like free. Like public use or whatever, public domain, free domain. So yeah, he's probably like, that's probably one of the reasons why. But I remember he like, I think it was like after his brother's death or whatever, he took up the moniker of like actually
of Doom.
MF Doom.
So before they were part of, oh man, what the hell was their group before? They had a group before. It was him, his brother, and someone else, and then his brother passed away, and then he dropped everything, came back like 4 years later or something as MF Doom and dropped Operation Doomsday, which is his debut album.
Yeah.
Very good listen. Very nice listen.
It is good, yeah. I think Doomsday is probably my favorite song by MF Doom's off that album.
That's fair. That's a good one. But in my opinion, that's one of the few songs where it's like he's rapping because he's good at rapping. He's not rapping to try and portray a moniker or whatever. Like, it seems like he's really just rapping to get it off his chest.
Yeah.
Because he's just showing, like, I'm nice at this. You know what I mean? Like, he's not rapping with a motive of, like, I'm trying to portray a character in my cohesive world of albums, or I'm trying to, you know, do this or that. It just seems like he's like, I'm rapping, I'm nice at this, this is what I'm going to do on this track, that's it.
When it's like at that point, it's probably like, you know, he's just testing out the moniker. If people like that music, like that idea, then he sort of like dives deep into it, but which makes sense.
I think the other thing about him is that he's a very underrated producer. You don't realize how good he was at producing until you listen to like some of his actual production albums or like people that use his production in general. So I'm pretty sure many members of Odd Future have used it at one point. Bunch of Pro Era members, namely like Joey Badass, have used it at one point. People reference MF Doom all the time. Like he had a pretty widespread influence, both in the production and like obviously lyrically, just in the hip hop industry as a whole. And I obviously it's touched upon in that video too. Like they open with Open Mike Eagle, and they're both geeking out about how nice MF Doom is.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. Well, it's like, I feel like he's one of those artists that, like, now that he's passed, a lot of people are going to claim, like, oh, he was a big, like, influence in my music. But mm-hmm. I feel like even within the hip-hop industry, it's like there's not a lot of people that were, like, legitimately influenced by that. I mean, like, you know, a lot of, like, the really hardcore rappers, like Eminem, Kendrick, like, J. Cole, I'm sure they were because that sort of is their styling. But even somebody like Anderson .Paak, who's, like, not really a hardcore rapper, he's still like, you know, he mentions MF Doom in his songs.
Yeah. I don't think you need to necessarily be the most lyrical rapper to be influenced by Doom, because again, like if you think about how his songs are structured, especially on Mad Villainy, that's a lot of songs sound like eerily similar and are structured very similarly to those songs back from 2004.
That's true.
Like one verse, concise, maybe two verses and a hook at most. And it's like very short, lots of skits, shorter songs in general. And it's like, you can see an influence of that, or with rappers that are definitely like next level lyrically. Like in my opinion, Earl Sweatshirt is like in the top five rappers right now for like just straight lyrical prowess. And like, he's obviously widely influenced by MF Doom, but then there's other people that like, not necessarily the most lyrically talented, but like still, you know, still decently lyrically talented, just not like, holy shit, like your next level bars. Like Cordae is an example of someone who I can see MF Doom inspiring him, but I don't think that he takes after Doom in that sense.
Yeah. That makes, Well, I mean, again, even with Anderson .Paak, it's like...
Yeah, like he might not necessarily be like the most lyrical person, but he could be influenced by him, whether it be his production, his personas, his cadences, his... Even just maybe something he said. Like it might not necessarily be a whole like, I'm taking after this guy's style and this is who inspires me, but it could just be like one line that you said and it decided to inspire you enough to make like an album or a song.
Yeah.
Or even say one line, you know what I mean?
Or even taking a lot of like pop culture references and like sort of weaving it into your album. Like a lot of that's something that's like super popular now. Like whether it's like ad libs or whatever, people do that a lot now. And I mean, fucking MF Doom literally based his whole moniker off of a fucking supervillain.
And take it, 100%. Okay, that's basically what I wanted to talk about, and how he made amazing ass inventions and albums in the form of albums and cool mediums of art, which kind of transitions into what you wanted to talk about, if I'm not mistaken. You want to talk about cool ass inventions made just, from
just the creativity of like some people, like over like the holiday break and like the last week. I've just been like looking at a ton of like, or at least I've had like a lot of recommended videos from like Hacksmith Industries, who's like a YouTube channel that they're just like a bunch of engineers and whatnot that like create basically real life versions of like sci-fi technology. So like they made like a real life lightsaber, which is like not necessarily exactly how like a lightsaber in Star Wars works, but like the fact that it's essentially like a working, it's basically just like a welding torch that has like a long
Yeah.
Like fucking.
But still, like a cool concept. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just like a light up plastic piece.
Yeah. And it's like, so it's like a plasma lightsaber that.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that. Sure. Yeah.
You saw that. So they like, they break open a, I mean, it's like essentially, well, I guess it's not gas powered because it's, well, I guess it, it would be because it's made out of plasma, but they like cut open a safe with it. And man, like I started like watching them more and more just to see like what the hell they're going to make. And like, it's kind of crazy to think like some of this stuff legitimately like 5-10 years down the road will like be legitimately realistic to how they are in movies and shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you guys saw, well, I guess you guys don't watch it, right?
I've seen the lightsaber one. I've seen the repulsor one, and I've seen the you mentioned it before, the car, the Lego car one. I've seen that something. Though.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've seen the repulsor one for sure. I remember that like pretty vividly. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they have like an exoskeleton that they just keep loading up weight on like an Olympic bar, and they're just like basically having him lift it up, and they just keep adding more and more weight, and it like does it. It's not straining him that much, but one of the coolest ones that I saw, and I guess it's not really that much of an invention. It's more just like it's science that they can just sort of manipulate, but they built a Tesla coil so that they can like transfer energy through the air. And then they had a guy go into, I guess they do shows like stunt shows or whatever. So they have this guy in like a chainmail suit so that the electricity goes to the chainmail and like doesn't actually kill you. And they had him hold up like Thor's hammer and throw lightning at holding like Captain America. Dude, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's
it's
cool.
Actually so sick. You're just like, he's just standing there and he just like fucking points it towards the shield and there's just like electricity going towards the shield. It's crazy. But dude, these guys are insane. Like, maybe they've already done everything, but like I wonder what other like sci-fi tech they could even do. Like, you've got Iron Man, I guess, well, Thor's lightning thing, I guess, but that's not really, like, they didn't create anything.
Watch them literally just, like, discover the secret to teleportation, just on accident. Like, seems like something they would do.
But, bro, like, they actually have so many, like, Iron Man tech. Like, they have, like, basically handheld, like, jets, and, like, a helmet and everything that works. Dude, I'm kind of excited to see like if they can make a legit Iron Man suit at some point.
Probably. They made the repulsor. Why can't they just keep going?
I mean, I guess.
It might not be like obviously how they do it in the movies, but you know, just like in general, just a working suit that's like bulletproof and can fire repulsors or something.
Mm.
Maybe like levitate off the ground a couple feet.
Yeah. Well, no, they have like handheld, like basically jetpacks. They could just fly around. But Steven, I want to get your opinion on this because I know you're like very techie, but I don't know. I don't know if you've watched any of this, so I guess that's fair. You might not have context.
I've probably seen like one or two videos here or there, like the lightsaber thing. I recall seeing a lightsaber video recently. I'm assuming it was from them.
Mm.
So I've probably seen a couple of their videos over time, but it's not something I've ever like delved deep into. But I totally have an appreciation for people that like just make cool shit, especially the stuff that like you always kind of like dream about, like, oh man, I saw this in a movie or a game or whatever, it would be so cool if that was real. And then you have these groups of people that like get as close to making it real as possible. It's super cool to see.
Yeah. But I guess, are we doing a short episode or just taking a break?
No, you guys just keep going on without me.
Cool. So we'll take a little break. All right, we're back. Matt left to go eat dinner, but that's okay. We'll carry on from here. The Hacksmith repulsor. Well, they use a laser in their video, but they did actually mention. I don't know if you watched the part where they mentioned the Russian guy who makes like an actual like repulsor cannon.
Well, no, I missed that.
And I've seen clips of that video, I think, on Facebook because it went viral like a while ago. But he basically just uses like hydrogen. Like some sort of like hydrogen cannon, and he just like blasts shit. That's also pretty cool. Oh, but I think cool. The laser is probably the Honestly, the laser's kind of sick. Because they basically just use, like, a photon beam unit or whatever. And then they use, like, focusing lenses. And then they just burn shit. So, I don't know. What do you think about that?
And potentially, I mean, it's, like, it's always cool to see just because it's, like, oh, wow. That's, like, an Iron Man gauntlet that you can, like, wear and it does cool stuff. But realistically, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen, and again, not that I'm super in depth with it, but like whenever I see these, like, oh, lightsaber in real life, Iron Man thing in real life or whatever, there's always like some big backpack attached to it or like a waist device. Like there's a way to make it work because, you know, movies are not trying to be realistic. They're trying to be cool. So will we ever get to a point where you can just straight up mimic the movie? Who knows? But for right now, it's still just cool to see that it's like, look, yes, there's strings attached, but at the end of the day, it is a thing that looks like what you saw in the movies and performs it similarly enough. Yeah.
Exactly. I think eventually, like, I mean, it's probably pretty far out, but I think eventually, like, we'll get to that point. Because even in the movie, like, Iron Man in the first movie or whatever, he uses, like, palladium, which, so he's basically just has a nuclear reactor in his chest. So I feel like at some point, if you could, I mean, not that it's, again, very realistic, but if you could somehow have a react, like, a nuclear reactor, like, the size of, like, I don't know, a fucking tin of, or like a small candle or whatever, then sure. But again, that's not realistic. That's not very realistic. You probably could have like a big battery pack of some sort, or like a reactor pack on your back. Then maybe it would work. But yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely like there's some caveats to like how these inventions work. And even like that lightsaber that we were talking about earlier, like they have like a huge like gas tank to be able to like use it, and it's not just like self-contained. Not that I think it would ever be self-contained.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, here's the thing. It's like when you look at technology like 50, 60 years ago or whatever, like thinking about like the computers that were used in like the moon landing, I guess that would actually be further back now. But like those were like rooms full of machinery to get somebody to the moon. And it would have been unfathomable that you could make something like several times more powerful than that in the size of something that could fit in your pocket, and yet we're there. So I've kind of just like, I kind of just have this opinion of just don't count technology out, because things that seem unfathomable in the past are reality today. So things that seem unfathomable to us today, like, I'm not going to count it out that another 50 years from now, they may be reality. I don't know how we'd get there. I don't, you know, I'm not enough into science to really discern what is just physically possible or isn't possible. But just from like an average person viewpoint, I just like, I don't know. I'm always excited about the future because who knows what wild shit that seems impossible today will be reality within our lifetime.
Yeah, that's true. I think where like we excel and see leaps are when we like improve on something that we already have or like tweak it and not necessarily, sure. You, 'cause like things that are like energy based are pretty hard to like improve and make leaps in because we have to follow the laws of, you know, physics and energy. But something like computing, like in the 60s, I'm pretty sure they were still running on like analog computers where basically they had like actual like machine, like hardware running, versus now, like, yeah, you have like a fan and, you know, you have like some small moving parts. But feasibly, you could literally just have, like, a solid-state hard drive and, like, all of your, like, processors and everything that are, like, all contained. They're not, like, an actual moving, piece of technology. And so that's why, like, you see, you know, things get way faster, way quicker. But it would be, it'd be interesting to see, like, even with, like, quantum computing, because that's something that's, like, sort of being dabbled in. But, like, that'll be, like, fucking life-changing for humanity, because that's, like, literally, it would literally put, like, supercomputers in the dust, like, the most basic unit.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the, like, most appreciable new developments that we should hopefully be seeing relatively soon is a new type of battery. Lithium ion has been used for what, since the 70s now, I think. And ironically enough, the same guy that made lithium ion is now, I'm not sure if he's leading development of this new battery or is just involved in some capacity, but he is once again working on a new battery type, which, especially now, like, don't get me wrong, like, smartphones and laptops can get you through a day usually, but especially with the development of, like, electric vehicles, of power storage with, like, renewable energy, and I mean, it, applicable to other devices as well, like your phone and your laptop, it's like, yeah, they get you through a day, but it could be better. So it's exciting to think that, like, I don't know what the timeline for that technology is, but that, you know, relatively soon within our lifetimes, we will see, like, a huge shift where things will, like, we won't be having to charge nearly as often as we currently do. It's still fundamentally a battery. It still works the same way, but the idea of, like, you know, charging your phone once a week instead of once a day or something like that is just wild. Or, like, being able to go on a road trip without having to plug your vehicle in at all. Like, yeah. So it's just, it's exciting to see how, like you said, like, it's iteration, but it's such a monumental step forward that it can, it can and likely will change how we live, because when you look at society and how much has developed around our use of technology and our development of technology, like, even within the last decade, like, smartphones, you know, back in 2010, they were still largely a novelty, and now they're almost a necessity. So, yeah, it's like, it'll be interesting to see how things change.
Yeah, well, and especially with, like, I mean, like you were saying with the battery, like, I feel like having a phone that lasts, like, a week or whatever is, it's, like, a nice to have. But when you're talking, like, large scale, like, yeah, we can power homes or vehicles or, like, industrial machinery with batteries that you maybe only have to charge, like, once a day, that is crazy. And, like, if we can get things efficient enough that, like, it's at that point, that's when, like, humanity takes, like, another leap, and we're just, like, like, our technology is just, like, so much better.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about the environmental impact. Like, don't get me wrong, EVs are getting way better at a very fast rate, but they're fundamentally limited by battery technology. Like, a company like Tesla has been doing incredible things with getting range out of their batteries, but there's still a wall that they're going to bump up against very soon of just, we can't do any more. Like, you can only make a lithium ion so dense, and you can only make it so big for a vehicle. Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, fundamentally, there is a limit here, and this new battery technology will completely change that. And so it's exciting to think, yeah, like you were talking about, like, industrial uses and such, like, there's a lot of cases where electric power just isn't viable because it doesn't make sense. Like, if something like that, like industrial machinery, you can't have a battery that dies after a few hours and then, like, constantly be swapping them or recharging them. Like, you need something that is dependable, reliable, gets the job done. So by introducing a new technology, yeah, now you can use like battery power and by extension renewable energy in areas that we haven't been able to before.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if, like, obviously, like, energy is sort of the main thing that comes to mind when you think, like, if it's only just a little bit more, or, like, a lot more compact and more efficient, mm-hmm. then, like, the doors are blown wide open. But I'm trying to think of, like, other either industries or, like, things that would be completely different if, like, the technology we have right now was just a little more efficient and just a little bit more compact, that, like, then the world would change. But, like, I don't...
I mean, honestly, like, this isn't, I don't think, necessarily related to battery technology, but, like, medicine is a field where we see some of the most appreciable, like, or I guess I shouldn't say appreciable, but, like, significant strides in technology. I say not appreciable because, like, in our day-to-day lives, most people are not interacting with medicine, like medical technology, in that way. Like, you're interacting with your phone, your computer, that kind of thing, those consumer devices. But in terms of the impact on humanity, like, just looking at our history, like, even now, the drugs we have now that address issues that were life-threatening some years ago, it's amazing to look at how far we've come and how far we can yet go. Like, to look at things today where if you have, like, any number of medical conditions, like, many are not treatable, and it's just making the patient more comfortable and prolonging their life, but otherwise it's not treatable. Or if it is treatable, it's like something like cancer. It's like, it can be treated, but there's no guarantee of success. And even if you do treat it, it's often, like, very exhausting and a very long process. So I think that's one where, you know, 100 years from now or whatever, that field will just be completely revolutionized and completely different from where it is today, where things that kill people today will be trivial 100 years from now.
And I think, so the COVID vaccine is like an mRNA vaccine, which is basically the same way that viruses, like, mutate and recode themselves. It basically just like takes it, like, so if you have an immunity to something and the virus, like, can't infect you anymore or whatever, it'll basically like add another genetic code to its, like, existing code, and it'll just, like, mutate, and then now it's, like, something just slightly different, but it's enough to, like, attack its host. I'm surprised that, like, now that, well, and I guess it's pretty early with this technology, but that with mRNA, Jesus, that's weirdly, like, complicated to say, mRNA technology, that we can't, like, figure out how to combat cancer with it, because cancer is essentially just, like, as far as I know, is, like, cells that have mutated and, like, cause your body to attack itself. So I'm surprised that, like, and maybe it's something that's being worked on, but, like, that technology can't, you know, affect, and I don't know, again, maybe I'm just thinking, like, too far ahead, but
sure. Yeah, like, I personally, I don't know enough about what's going on the research side to have any opinion. But yeah, I mean, like, another thing, like, stem cell research, like, and CRISPR, not that I know a ton about it, but, like, just from, you know, little bits and pieces I pick up here and there, my understanding is that the idea there is, once the technology is refined enough, that you could, in theory, modify someone's genetics before birth to eliminate any birth defects, or, like, which is just incredible. Like, the millions of people that could have a substantially better quality of life if they have these issues addressed before birth is just wild. And I know you have people on the other side of the fence that are like, oh, it's unethical to be modifying with someone's genes and such. And that's a whole other discussion. But just the capability of that technology, of, like, someone who is born today has to deal with a condition beyond their control, which yeah. affects their quality of life forever. The fact that, like, we are close to a point where we can say, like, we can detect that before birth and change it so it is not a thing is just like, wow, that's a lot more people that can just have an easier, more enjoyable life.
Yeah. Yeah, so like I took a class on this in like my second year or whatever that sort of like covered very basic like CRISPR, but it's sort of already a thing in like very early stages where like you could, I think it's like you get, you can go in for like sort of a genetic like test to see if your like child would have a potential birth defect or like condition or whatever that, and then when you do have or do decide to have a child, you can do, I think they'd end up doing it through like in vitro, so you know, have an egg sample, sperm sample, and then they go and then you can use CRISPR technology to like change the DNA. And you like you mentioned like the ethical side of it, and like you're definitely right, like it's sort of like playing God or whatever, but it's like you're kind of just like doing what nature would do beforehand, you know what I mean? Because eventually like you would evolve to like, you know, I don't know if you'd live past cancer, but like, you know, you'd probably evolve to be and not have a lot of these diseases in some capacity. I'm sure some of them are like, there's nothing you could do unless you were like actually messing with DNA, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. Yeah. Yeah. The ethical debate is an interesting one. I mean, I don't want to get off topic. It is a whole other conversation, but like it's, I think it's great that is at least something that is being worked on and is a choice that will be made available where it's like, if you can give your kid a better quality of life, you know, like again, ethical thing to each their own, but like it, in my opinion, it's like, yeah, like why not? Like if it's like, oh yeah, your kid is going to be born with, I don't know, like I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but literally like any of hundreds of thousands, yeah, like it doesn't even have to be something lethal or not lethal, sorry, it doesn't have to be something that will like reduce their lifespan or anything, but there's so many things that just make living harder for people. And it's like, why would I want that for my kid? You know, like if you give me the option of like, oh, you can make their life better by like modifying this, like, yeah, of course. Like I want my kid to have the best life they can. So I think that's great that's so close, which just, I mean, it still almost sounds like science fiction, like the idea of like you can not create a perfect child, but you can like remove defects before birth. It's like, and it doesn't mean they're going to be, you know, healthy forever. They're still human, but they're not born with some sort of, you know, disadvantage or whatever, where they're already, you know, struggling from day one.
Yeah,
it's like that's just, yeah, I don't know, that's incredible. So again, that's another thing where it's like 50 years ago, if you told someone that, they'd probably be like, what, how yeah. are you gonna do that?
you'd be forced to go to church and have like an exorcism or something. Like, yeah. Like, no, you can't mess with genetics, that's God's thing.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, never count technology out, because people just do wild shit.
Okay, that got me thinking. Now that we're talking about like people and like messing with people, and we talked about like technology being more efficient, especially batteries, what if you could like somehow be more energy efficient? So like you didn't have to sleep at all ever. Like, which is a weird concept. Like, I get, like, you have to give your brain a break, but, like, theoretically, your body, like, as long as you have enough calories, you can, like, you're good.
Do I have to plug myself in? Can I just plug myself in the car? Like, I sit down in the driver's seat and I start charging?
Nah, it'd just be, like, your regular life. You just eat food and you're good, but you don't have to sleep. Like,
interesting.
That would be crazy. Because imagine that. Imagine you imagine you sleep 6 hours a night or whatever, and now you don't have to. You don't have to sleep. That's 42 hours every week that you now have. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, with like bio augmentations. It's like right now, like, prosthetics are pretty much, to my knowledge, just exclusively like, oh, if part of your body needs it for whatever reason, you can have it. Like, it's like they're making great strides, but it's still second place to your actual body. It's just like, oh yeah, if you lose a leg, or, you know, like, if this can offer you a better quality of life for whatever reason, but if you have a fully functioning human body, that's still the peak. Like, that's still the bar we're trying to reach. But, like, we're going to surpass that one day. We're going to reach a point where prosthetics and, like, implants are superior to a normal human body. Now, I don't know how far off that's going to be, especially when you consider, like, things like feel. Like, to my knowledge, I could be wrong, but to my knowledge, we don't have a way of communicating, like, the feel of something with, like, a prosthetic arm. I know we have, like...
I think I saw a couple months ago, but yeah, it's basically like a prosthetic hand that they figured out how to, like, connect to your nervous system, I guess just through like electrical shock. But basically, like, I don't know how they connect it, and they don't really go into depth, at least from what I remember in this video. But basically, this guy could, like, touch something, and, like, it wasn't obviously as sensitive as, like, a normal hand, but it was like he could feel, like, the weight of something. He could feel, like, the size and everything. It wasn't like, oh, I can feel the exact texture of this, but it was like he could touch it and sort of, like, understand what he's holding.
But yeah, so I mean, progress to be done. I know, like, with vision as well, there's, like, some versions of that, something I haven't seen for a while, so maybe it's developed even further. But a while ago, I recalled, like, someone who was vision impaired, like, I believe they were totally blind, and with some sort of camera and computer that was hooked up to their brain, they could see, like, a snapshot of the world. It wasn't like a live feed, but they could see, like, a snapshot, and it might have been monochromatic as well, but they could see something. So it's like the technology is developing. It'll be a while before it's as precise, especially with stuff like dexterity as well. Dexterity, feel, perception, like, it'll be a while, but, like, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't eventually reach a point where all of that is as good as the human body, and then you start enhancing it in ways like superior strength and, like, with vision, like, you know, so, like, many people need glasses just to correct their vision. In theory, you would be able to enhance your vision, like, go beyond what normal vision could do.
Zoom so, in, like, a mile.
And I mean, as well, with, like, and I'm just talking about, like, body parts here, but when you talk about, like, a neural interface that, like, a company like Neuralink is working on, that just allows you to use technology just with your brain, just with, like, not actually having to physically interact with anything, like, I guess that isn't necessarily superior to a normal body, but it would make, I don't know, like, day-to-day tasks, like, mundane tasks, it would kind of just automate them in a way if you can just think and it happens. So
I feel like that's, like, the ideal sort of, like, Google Assistant type thing, you know what I mean? Like, a lot, because that's sort of like, and I guess that's sort of like the gap, because I think even, like, Elon Musk was saying with Neuralink, the whole point is, like, communication gets more efficient. Like, you don't even have to use words. You can just communicate to somebody. But, like, I feel like that's the one thing, like, that people, I guess, if you look at, like, pre-assistant era, people are like, imagine if I could just say this and it would happen. Mm-hmm. But then there's always, then somebody's always like, well, imagine if you could just think it and it happens. And it's like, now we're kind of getting to that point where, like, you could be, like, in your garage coming home and just be like, turn on the television and fucking turn on the kettle or whatever. And it just, like, you walk in and boom, it's on. It's like, it's already done. Like, that's kind of crazy. And the fact that we're there is, it's like human augmentation that's, like, not augmenting the human, if you know what I mean. You know, because it's like, you're not necessarily, well, I guess you are technically augmenting the person, but it's, like, with its peripheral, like,
it's like adding, though. Like, it's not like replacing something you have with something better. It is like adding an ability to the human body that you naturally don't have something comparable.
Yeah.
So, which, is super cool. I mean, like, as well, like, AI, because you mentioned, like, assistants, like, that's also a fairly recent development. Yeah. Like, I know Siri's been around the longest, with Alexa and Google Assistant being more recent, but all of those were in the last decade. And so it's like, that's still such a primitive technology. And it's clearly where a lot, like, billions of dollars are going towards. Like, this is, like, the big focus for tech companies. And so it's like, it'll be really interesting to see how that develops now that we're, like, going into a new decade, or, sorry, it's 2021. I guess we're in a new decade now where it's, like, full steam ahead, just, like, investing and focusing hard on artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. It is still very new, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah. I feel like, because, so if you had to, if like, that technology existed today and you had to get an implant, would you do that?
Like, if I had the option to?
Yeah. Because here's my thing about it, is if you have that ability, I feel like it's only, like, marginally, like, better than if you had, like, a Google Assistant or Siri that was, like, let's say Google Assistant, Siri, or, like, 2 years ahead from now, they're a little bit better. The speech recognition's better. You don't have glitches all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the convenience is, like, 99% as if you had, like, Neuralink, but now you're not putting anything in your body.
Like, if you kind of imagine in a voice assistant, like the one from Her, I'm pretty sure you've seen that.
I haven't. That's one of the, like, Joaquin Phoenix movies that I have to see.
Okay, well, yeah, that's a movie that has, like, a very sophisticated voice assistant that, like, is essentially on the level of comprehension as a human.
Okay.
And it's like, I get what you're saying there. And at that point, it does kind of, like, make you question what is the value of getting an implant? Like, what is the convenience there? I don't know. I mean, I guess it would kind of depend on, like, I'd have to see, like, the implementation of the technology. I think that's something I would be, like, open to doing at some point. But it really depends on the implementation, like, how widely supported is it? How deep is that, like, communication with the technology, you know? Like, there's a difference between, you know, using something like that and saying, like, oh, turn on my TV and play this movie on Netflix, versus being able to just experience a movie in, like, a second or whatever. Like, if, like, I don't know if, like, this technology would even be capable of that, or if that's just some, like, sci-fi thing I'm kind of correlating it to, but something like, when you think of, like, the Matrix, of, like, you're connected to a computer, you request information, you have the information. Like, if it's something like that, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I don't know how download.
Yeah, I don't know how realistic something like that is. But that said, there's also a conversation about putting a computer in your brain so that you can control technology. So, like, that seems pretty far out there itself. And that's, like, actually very close to reality. So, it's something that I don't know enough about. But, yeah, in theory, if you could reach that point, like, why? Yeah, of course. Like, that would make things so much simpler. If just I need something or I want something, or like I want to know something, and it's just there, you know, like that'd be super cool. Or especially like, something. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I feel like the point at which you're kind of talking about, where like the Matrix, where like you think of something and then boom, you just know it. I feel like that's so far out, because I think,
sure. Yeah.
Like at this point, it's basically just like you're just getting rid of like the phone interaction, where like sure. if you Google something, you still have to like read through a bunch of stuff, and you're like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like you can Google something and like read through a whole page that's just crap, and then like the last like paragraph tells you like what you were looking for.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess it's a question of, and this is my like limited understanding of these devices, but is it a one-way signal of like you think something, this device interprets those signals as something that the technology, like your computer or whatever, can understand, and it sends that signal to your computer? Like, is it just a one-way command of, yeah, you're not physically interacting with it, you just have like a middleman that's kind of translating these brain signals into a command to your device? Or is it bi-directional, where your device can also send a response back that you can interpret without needing to interact with it? Another implementation that would be interesting is like video games. Like if they found a way to tie video games to your senses, which I mean, like, you know, not a new concept, so to speak, but like that idea of like, I'm going to play a game and I can hear and feel and smell and even like see what the game is as though I am actually there. Like I don't know how far out that would be, but that would be insane. And to my knowledge, if I recall correctly, I believe Gabe Newell, like from Valve, I believe he has said they're working on that, like early stages, but I'm pretty sure he did come out and just straight up say we're working on like full immersion video games.
That's
it. Like just try to the best of my memory. Do not quote me on that.
See, that's a wild idea. And like to loop it back to the very beginning of what we were talking about, people's creativity is like already insane, but imagine you could, within music or with anything, movie, video game, you could like add and I guess within a movie or video game, it makes a little bit more sense because it's like a, you know, more immersive experience, but you could add feeling. Could you imagine the art that it would take for a musician like, you know, like MF Doom, that not only does he have these rhymes, but you can like feel the rhymes, like you can feel the pattern, you can feel the beat. Dude, that is mind blowing. That kind of creativity would be insane. And I feel like if we have that sort of technology, that's not even that far off.
So here's the quote from Gabe Newell. This was from an article in IGN. I'm reading it off of a VR website called Road to VR. This is from Gabe. Personally, the area I'm spending a lot of time on has been growing out of a bunch of research that occurred a while ago in brain-computer interfaces. I think that's kind of long lead stuff. That's kind of the background thread that I get pulled back into when other things aren't demanding my attention. In the brain-computer stuff, we're way closer to the Matrix than people realize. Mm. It's not going to be the Matrix. It's a movie that misses all the interesting technical subtleties and just how weird the post-brain-computer interface world is going to be. It's going to have a huge impact on the kinds of experiences that we can create for people. Here's the interesting part. Quote, I think connecting to people's motor cortex and visual cortex is going to be way easier than people expected, and doing things like reading and writing to somebody's motor cortex is way more of a tractable problem than making people feel cold. And you never would have guessed that. I never would have guessed that before going into it. It turns out your brain has really good interfaces for some things and really badly designed, kludgy, in, I do not recognize that word, kludgy interfaces for doing other things. And the fact that your immune system gets involved in your perception of temperature means there's all sorts of weird parts of your brain that participate in the sensation of being cold, whereas your motor cortex or your visual cortex are much more tractable problems.
What that's telling me is that not only are we going to have like crazy capabilities in the future, but that could also provide people, like you were saying, with the ability to see, the ability to speak, like the ability to hear. Like that's crazy. And they could do it not only with the real world, but like with a virtual world, which is an entirely another experience.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess like the sensation, like, I mean, he just gave an example, but it seems like from that example he gave that like sensations are difficult, but just telling your brain, here's what you see, or here's like what you're like feeling, or what, or not feeling, because that would be a sensation, but what did he say? It was motor cortex and visual cortex. Okay, like here's what you're seeing. Yeah, it's like, or and like here's how you're moving, I guess. Like when he says motor cortex, I would assume that relates to like how you like tell yourself to move, and then how that translates into like a virtual world or whatever. Yeah. So it's like, I guess that's easy. It's just making it believable, like making you feel like you're there. That's the harder part. But yeah, I mean, it's like straight up, it's something that is being worked on. How far out is it? I don't know, but I hope it's within our lifetime, because that the idea of playing a video game that is imperceptible from reality, like that's the goal. That's the end goal of just like, it's a virtual world that feels like the real one.
Or even a movie. Because the thing is with video games, it's still like animated. Like the graphics might look really good, but with a movie, it's still like completely.
It's a passive experience.
Yeah.
But so yeah, all you like, they can script everything around you and then just say, okay, you're in the eyes of the person. Like, think about like a first person film. Like, I know there are very few of them, but think about like a film from a first person perspective where it's just like you're feeling everything they go through. You're just sitting there experiencing it, but that level of immersion is just like uncomparable to anything that we have today.
I think if that, like, if first person, or if that sort of immersion with like your brain and motor cortex and everything, if that was like attainable, then first person movies would be like the thing. Like, I think movies would just
I agree
that.
No, for sure. I mean, something like virtual reality, it's still very niche, but like it, you can already, like, trying virtual reality, you can see the potential it has. And it's like, really, once the technology's there, like, I don't know if movies will go the way of like put on a headset for virtual reality, but for gaming, at least, that's the middleman of like, before we get to fully immersive, like, this is as believable as like a traditional gaming setup can get. And it's like you can see it already, despite the fact that it's just like early stages of like actual like good technology. Like, the idea of VR has been around for a while, and there have been failed attempts. Now we're at the point where it's like, oh, this is actually something now. Still early stages, but it's like you can see it's a whole new experience.
Yeah, I just had a thought. if you were in a first person like movie, especially like being a movie, not like, because at least a video game you control yourself, but in a movie you're just forced to sit there and like experience this. Imagine if you were in like a horror movie or some sort of action movie where the fucking character gets tortured. Bro, I'm out.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah, that's actually something that video games kind of have going for them right now that movies don't, is movies are entirely passive, but video games, when you hand control to the person, even if they don't feel what the character is feeling, they're still in the shoes of that character. Yeah. Like the most recent Modern Warfare had a good few moments like that, where it's just like, oh, this is deeply unpleasant. Like, I am not physically feeling what the character is feeling, but it's not a movie where I can just passively let things happen either. Like,
yeah.
I need to be in control. The Last of Us Part Two is another really recent example of that, that a lot of people reacted negatively to because they were like, I don't want to have to do these things. But that's the entire point, is it's like, it tries to be like an uncomfortable experience of, here's the story we're telling, live that story, like, yeah. as best as we can do that with our current technology. And it's like, it's already like, there have been like, with those two games, there have been moments where it's just like, oh, I don't really want to do this. This is like uncomfortable. So they're already like trying to go for that. And yeah, if you can actually like trick your brain into believing that you are in that experience, and then yeah, like movies start to be able to do that as well. That's, it's interesting. And it'll be interesting to see how that affects people's psychology of just
I think it would just ruin humanity.
Yeah, like we're going that way. Like, that's a thing that's kind of inevitable. It's just like, how immersive can we make these experiences? Entertainment is just so foundational to society and has been for centuries. It's like, we're gonna keep trying to make that better and better. But yeah, like, I mean, you look at people that have like gaming addictions. It's like, I can't even imagine what people's psychology will be when the games become as believable as reality. That'll be interesting to see how that affects people. And yeah, if you have characters in movies or whatever that go through a traumatic experience and people live through that themselves, like feeling that. Yeah, like that's... It'll be interesting. I feel kind of scary.
Yeah, I feel like on the less scary side is like enjoying music in some sort of physical sense.
Sure.
Because like,
I mean,
like,
there,
even now, like, you know, if you go to a concert or whatever and you, there's sort of like this almost physical experience where you're like, it's really just your brain tricking yourself with like chemicals being like, yeah, this is a pleasant experience, blah, blah, blah. But if you could actually like physically feel music, like a lot more physically than you can by just like being next to a speaker or whatever, I feel like that is sort of like the flip side to the potential downside of like being the character in a horror movie or something.
Sure. Do you watch Black Mirror at all?
I've seen episodes here and there.
Okay. So, I mean, you know that the series is generally almost always about like the grim future of technology, of like, if things are misused, what does it lead to? But there is, I believe there are a couple episodes that have a more positive tone, but I've only seen one of them. And it is the same idea of like, it's a video game that's fully immersive and you believe it to be reality.
Oh, this is the one with Anthony Mackie?
No, I haven't seen that one actually.
No?
Okay. This is, that's the same idea. This is a couple seasons ago. I think this was before Netflix bought the rights actually. It follows, you're introduced to like the characters in the virtual world first. I guess spoilers for like this season 3 episode of Black Mirror. You're introduced to the virtual characters first, and then you find out later in the episode that these virtual characters that like develop a friendship in the game, like they meet each other in game and develop a friendship in game, they're actually like elderly people. Like one of them is like very old, like in her like 70s or 80s or something. So like obviously like she can't do the same things in real life that she can in the game as a young 20-year-old. And the other person I believe was like terminally ill and bedridden. And it's like, but they were able to just like go in this game and live this virtual life together and enjoy being free, which they couldn't in real life. So it's like with anything, there's good and bad. So I don't want to get too caught up talking about the negatives when the positives also have the opportunity to give people experiences that can greatly benefit their lives.
Well, on that lighthearted note, let's call it there. I think we sort of went down the rabbit hole. into that whole like creativity into fucking experiencing things that aren't real, essentially.
Yeah,
if you guys enjoyed, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching if you're on YouTube. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.
See ya.
See ya.